Hello, hi. Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast, episode number 103. I'm the host this week, Will Wilson, and with me is Tracy Erickson.
Hello.
And John Jordan.
Hello.
It's been an interesting week so far. You right, guys?
Too interesting.
Too interesting.
Much too interesting. For me to be in charge of the site, it needs to be a boring week. I should get some stuff done.
There's been actually quite a lot of exciting news happening, and I've been, for once this week, I've actually been playing. I've been day and night playing iOS games. I've barely even touched any of my other systems this week, which is interesting. This is one of my introductions where it goes nowhere and I don't have any funny stories about being robbed or eating donuts. So, let's go straight into the news.
News!
Right, first up on the news this week is, of course, id Software is finally... Well, I say finally as if it's like a really long thing, but actually they've released Rage, the first version or the first game of Rage, onto the App Store. It's taken the form of a on-rails shooter, and we've all played it, all three of us, and we've all got differing views. Actually, no, I think me and Tracy are pretty much the same. but John's view is different.
Is it? I don't know what your view is.
My view is pretty much in line with Tracy's, to be fair. But
you're saying we all agree?
At the risk of preempting everyone's opinions, what does everyone think about this? About it? So, I mean, I've played it on the iPod Touch second gen, so I haven't played the fancy pants HD version. But then again, I paid 50p less. So who's the one who wins?
I haven't played like a lot of it. I just kind of played it almost just because I felt I kind of had to. I felt obligated that I had to, kind of thing. I don't know. I mean, it's very id, isn't it? It's just I don't know. It's kind of odd. It's just even the way they do their textures and stuff. It's just everything looks kind of slightly kind of like waxy kind of skin. Obviously, it's not supposed to be realistic. Yeah. But it wasn't really not really my game. I don't think I didn't like the controls very much, and didn't really find it very very imaginative, or I'm not one of those people who just want to cane high scores, so you know I'd much rather go through something at my own pace and like score badly but kind of feel I'm in control. Whereas it's completely not designed for the likes of me, but obviously very impressive.
I think you make a good point. I think it is if you've played other id games, this feels just like them. It's really kind of amazing. It's really hard to kind of pinpoint what that quality is, because I think it's more than just the graphics having that kind of waxy look. It's really the overemphasis of the visuals above everything else, above anything else, because it looks so good. But like you said, John, it's really unimaginative. It's really pretty. I mean, it's not anything new, really, in the sense of gameplay. And that doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily a bad thing. But, because if that was the case, then we wouldn't, you know, enjoy as many tower defense games as we do.
But it's kind of funny, though, that tower defense games are all about kind of at least pretending to be imaginative, aren't they? You go, oh, I'm going to place my tower here. Whereas this is completely going, we've got to shoot this guy. And then, I mean, the thing I found really odd was like those the bullseye kind of bonus things. It's kind of like, what? You know, it's just absolutely kind of a, you know, kind of crazy high play type stuff where I've got to shoot a bullseye. I mean, it's not even, I don't even get like spots of blood coming off a bullseye. Just kind of thought it was kind of a strange mentality there.
It's an interesting game, I mean, because when I was playing it, I kept veering back and forth between like, I really don't like this. This really isn't for me. To, you know what though? I it's not bad. There's some enjoyment to be gathered from it. I mean, that's what's kind of, I think in general, stepping back from Rage, just these sorts of games in general on iPhone can be really tricky to to come to a an opinion on, because they are so simple, and a lot of them are very unimaginative, but that's also kind of the point. You know, I mean, it isn't really meant to be anything like wildly innovative or particularly, you know, deep. I mean, that said, I think there's things that it should do that it doesn't.
Yeah,
but you don't have leaderboards.
That's really odd. That's really odd, isn't it? Because, well, even not having game centers just kind of, you know, they must have made a conscious decision for some reason not to do it. I mean, why on earth would you otherwise not have it?
I didn't like the fact that, I don't know if it's the same actually on HD, because no one else seems to have gone for this controls, but it defaults to tilt on the standard edition. Yes. And it's just horrible, because it's very frustrating. You can't seem to tilt the camera as much as you can on touch when you're in tilt, which is a bit odd.
Right.
So it left me in situations when I first played it where I couldn't get to any items because they were just slightly too far to the right. Also, I don't like the whole fact. I don't know. Everything didn't seem right when it's when you're going for these items and you're moving the camera across. If you shoot someone and then you go, right, I'm going to take that item, it then just takes control of the camera and moves you away from the item. Yeah. And you're like thinking, no, I'm moving to the right. Please let me just take the item.
Yeah, I thought the whole control system was kind of odd. I mean, I switched to the, so I had kind of control, you know, the on-screen touch thing. But then you're trying to move this thing around, and the camera's taking you another way. And then you've got to tap on the things when the little hand icon comes up on them and stuff. And just like, you're all over the place. And I kept pressing the pause button. It was just kind of like...
Yeah, the pause button, by God.
Okay, I'm so glad to hear that, because that is so... Because I have this problem, actually, with a lot of games, where I hit the pause button accidentally. And so when I was doing that yesterday, I was like, no, I actually had two sentences in the review that discussed it. And I thought, you know, I'm always wrong on this. It's always my fault that I'm hitting the pause button. So I'm just going to take that out. It's not the most important thing in the world. There are more important things to say about the game. But now that I'm hearing you guys have the same problem, and there was actually a comment on the article today saying that please update the game and move the pause button. Now I feel like I'm not so crazy.
Because it is weird. You kind of think, how often is someone going to want to pause a game? I mean, obviously, you need to have a pause button in it, but it's not very often you want to pause a game, is it? I wouldn't have thought, even a mobile game. So you want to have it somewhere, but quite small and away from where your fingers might otherwise be.
Well, you know, I think it's important. I mean, we're really kind of harping on the game here, and I think that everything that we've said is certainly valid. But, you know, one of the things I do when I'm reviewing a game is I try to step back and think, is this worth buying? Is there any entertainment that can be gleaned from it? And at the end of the day, I think there can be. I just don't think it's going to appeal to everybody. That's why I think it gets the 7 rather than getting an 8 or a 9.
Mm. Well, it seems pretty much everyone else has given it around that kind of score as well, haven't they? Mm. Normally we're the lowest, whereas a couple of reviews that I've seen have given it that kind of mark. So I kind of think everyone's kind of slightly, we're anticipating it and they're slightly disappointed, clearly. Because you think normally in a game like that, you would get, you know, anything less than an 8 would kind of
be like, what the hell? At risk, I don't want people to think that it's like we go into, when we sit there and we review, you know, when I approach a game, I try to approach it with as much of an open mind as possible. But this was essentially what I was expecting, not because I was, you know, because this is kind of what it does. You know, if you look at Doom, you know, I remember when Doom 3 or Doom 4, Doom 3. Was that the one that came out in the last? I can't remember.
Doom 3, yeah. I think.
Yeah, Doom 3. Everybody was saying, oh my God, it looks so great. It looks amazing. And I'm thinking, it's probably just going to be a run-and-gun shooter. It's not going to have very much depth. And sure enough, that's what it was. And people were really disappointed because it looked more inventive than it actually was. And that's kind of their MO, you know? So it's not surprising to me. I'm actually, you know... If anything is surprising, is that the lack of leaderboards. That really shocks me. That really does. I just don't understand when you have Game Center there, you know, and you don't use it, I just don't understand when developers don't take advantage of the sort of social networking tools that are there.
That was what we thought about Rage. It's not a bad game. 7's a pretty decent score, to be fair. So, yeah. I mean, and also, it's cheaper if you don't own one of the fancy pants iPhones, and it still looks good. So if you are on that,
it's still cheap if you get the HD version.
It's half the price, 50%, kind of the other price. Gah. Anyway, let's move on to the next news story, though, which is the let's talk about Smurfs. Let's Smurf about Smurfs for a Smurf bit of Smurf time. Smurfs Village. Earlier on in the week, there was reports coming out, shocking reports, saying that Smurfs Village, a freemium game based obviously around the Belgian comic book and / cartoon characters, the Smurfs, blue things, white hats, you know them. They were outselling Angry Birds just purely through in-app purchases, which is pretty big, pretty good going really by Capcom, who are the makers of it. But then more reports came out. As we broke that story, reports came out that a lot of parents were finding that their children were accidentally buying in-app purchases because they'd download the app, which is free, but they'd have to put in the password, as you know. And then the child would accidentally, because they'd hand it to the child, and then the child would accidentally buy Smurfberries, which are the in-app purchase item. There won't be any password asked for it because iOS doesn't ask for a password if you've already put it in correctly for 15 minutes. So as long as a child went in and tried to buy Smurfberries in those 15 minutes, they wouldn't be questioned. So that became a sort of thing. So we I'm running myself into a corner with me talking. But what does everyone think about this whole the whole system itself, the 15-minute system? I mean, there is a way of stopping in-app purchases altogether, but do you think this is something that, I mean, because Capcom didn't have this up in their app description before, but they've added it now to say iOS does this. This isn't our fault.
This is Capcom's fault. I'm sorry. This is not a problem with other freemium games because, you know, game developers should be smart enough to put in verification. You know, put a dot when you say you're going to purchase something. The freemium games I've played ask you a second time, are you sure you want to purchase this for, you know, 99 cents? They didn't put that in there, so
they don't ask you to put in the password again, do they? So it's not, while they could put another step in it, they, you know, it's in a sense an Apple decision about whether it's a default to every time you want to, you know, which obviously most people you wouldn't want to do. So there is some sort of kind of balancing system there. You know, it's not anyone's direct fault, I don't think, but everyone probably shares a bit of the blame.
All right, fair enough. I think that's fair. But I just think it's interesting that this is coming up as a problem with this game, and people aren't complaining about other games.
No, but that's probably because, I mean, this is clearly a game that kids are going to be playing where they're probably not going to be playing Gun Brothers. So, you know, a 7-year-old is not going to be playing Gun Brothers, but they definitely will be playing Smurfs. So, I mean, it's just from that kind of demographic, you're going to get more of a problem. But clearly, I mean, I think the more surprising thing is it's not, I mean, I don't think you can say that it's number one because lots of kids are buying $100 worth of Smurfs.
No, actually,
that's the weird thing.
The ratings on the App Store are quite extraordinary. It's over 4 stars, 1,600 ratings. This is the UK App Store, which is a lot. I mean, that's not a small game. That's a big game. I actually had a go on it, and I mean, in terms of Smurfability, Smurf's a Smurf. You know, it's a Smurf Smurf. It's not Smurf, but
I guess the other thing is weird because there's not really been, you know, like for some kind of kids titles, there have been kind of a history of computer games, whether good or bad in the past. Whereas I don't know if there has been for the Smurfs, and I've just kind of like missed them or something.
It could be one of those games where it would have fallen into the category of if this was the early 90s, it would be in the educational PC section, I guess. that sort of section which anyone serious about computers never looked at.
Yeah.
I can imagine they were big in that sort of area, wherever that area is now. But yeah, no, it's not too bad. Yeah. I've actually got the official reaction from Capcom. I received it quite a little while ago today, where basically it's a very sort of generic thing. Capcom has been in the video game business for more than 25 years. The last thing we want to do is to be misperceived as taking advantage of children. We find consumer complaints of children and inadvertently purchasing an app content lamentable. Unfortunately, once a consumer downloads an app, their account remains active for 15 minutes. During this time, it's possible to download in-app content without re-entering the password. This is not unique to our app. This is a function of iOS, and we have no control over it. They go on to say that they've put up the warning on the App Store description. But that's their official response. That's from from our contact in Capcom. But yeah, if you are concerned, if you are a parent and you do not want your child to be buying Smurfberries accidentally, we have posted a guide up to make sure you can turn off in-app purchases. But if you want to know, it's in the settings menu, and then you go to restrictions, and then you can do it from there. ironically, it crashes the Smurfs if you do that, whereas every single other freemium game I tried, it displays a message saying that in-app purchases have been disabled. Talking to Capcom, of course, if you're feeling bitter about the Smurfberries, then maybe you'll feel a little bit lighter by the fact that there's another free update for Street Fighter 4 coming out, which includes Thai kickboxer. He's the one with the eye patch. He's the one with the dragon breath punch. You can tell how much I play Street Fighter 2. He's coming for free. There's a lot of new multiplayer updates for free, including Arcade Weight, and DJ is possibly on his way, probably for free. So I wouldn't look too much into Capcom's evilness or whatever from the Smurfs Village escapade, because they seem to be pretty nice to the Street Fighter 4 consumers. Moving on from that, completely away from anything Capcom's doing and anything that Smurfs are doing, Backbreaker 2 hasn't it got a tagline? It's got a night. Yeah,
vengeance.
There we go.
Vengeance.
Backbreaker 2 from Natural Motion Games is on its way. It's coming in the next month or two. Tracy, you know more details than me.
Yeah. If you haven't played Backbreaker, I know, John, you're a fan. You really like the game.
Yeah,
it's a good game.
A lot of people played it. 3 million downloads plus. So they're doing a sequel. It's interesting when simple kind of these arcade games get sequels. They kind of struggle with sort of justifying the sequel, because it usually is just like more levels. There's not actually anything that makes it a true sequel other than the fact that it has new levels. This one actually sounds pretty substantive. There's like all sorts of new moves. There's two new stadiums. There's game center integration.
Got to say, the screenshot looks amazing.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, is that these guys are pretty talented when it comes to leveraging iPhone hardware. So, yeah, I mean, and it's not going to be expensive. I don't know exactly the price, but it'd probably be like $59.99 is what I'm expecting. So yeah, it looks like a good little thing. They're saying winter, which is code language for we hope to get it out before the holidays, but if we can't, we can say that it comes out in winter, which includes January, February. So my gut says expect it for the Christmas holiday.
Oh, that's good news. Backbreaker 1 was ace. It was one of the first games I actually downloaded for the iPod Touch.
Oh, really?
Yeah. it's good.
It's actually kind of funny, because comparing it with Rage, because it's a very similar kind of concept where you have lots of kind of high-end graphics that don't really matter. You know, so it's doing something clever. It's restricting the gameplay so it can make the most of the graphics, but yep, doing it in a completely different way to the way Rage does it.
On Backbreaker 2, it was more of a sort of like, the graphics were used for those sort of individual boof moments rather than... I mean, that was when you noticed all the animation, was when they did the slow-mo crunches.
Yeah.
Whilst in Rage, it's sort of all the time kind of thing. So cool. It doesn't quite have that same sort of...
I don't know, they definitely compare and contrast on that. But I mean, to be honest, I wonder how... Because kind of adding the new kind of like defensive mode sounds a lot not so much fun almost, I don't know. And maybe more like American football like, whereas I think the first one, it didn't matter if you played American football or not, you just kind of knew what you had to do and it was cool. I think it's probably harder to make playing defence as exciting as playing offence.
Do you think this is just a secret way of introducing the game of the proper backbreaker game into iPhone, but in installments?
No, I don't think they can do that.
Okay, well, that's it for the news this week. It's been good, but there is, I can hear some sort of, I'm sure that's a canary I can hear, which means that there hasn't been an explosion in the mine this week, so we're going to be going down to the rumor mine.
Rumor. Rumor.
Looks like the canary was wearing a gas mask. God damn it. through the hazy smoke and smog, what rumors have we got there?
Well, we have some good ones today, this week. Big franchise Asphalt, which is a Game Loft creation arcade racer, is set for a sixth installment late spring of next year.
Mm-hmm. God. You know what? Asphalt. I'm not a big fan.
No, really? Why is that?
I don't know. They just don't feel right. Every single time, like Asphalt 5, I just didn't get into it. I don't know why. I like the track design. The track design's actually quite good, but I don't know. The handling was...
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I mean, it's super, super arcadey. But this, you know, I think you have a point with the handling. I think if they could tune up the handling a little bit more.
Yeah, if they could sort that out, then it would be really good in my honest opinion.
Because it's got nice depth. It's got just the right amount of depth for me. You know, where you can upgrade your cars, you can unlock cars, but you don't feel overwhelmed. I mean, it's a different type of game, but... You know, I remember sitting down with one of the Gran Turismo games and being so completely, like, disgusted about the amount of stuff that could be unlocked that it actually discouraged me from wanting to play it, because it's like, well, if I sit down and go into a race, I'm going to have to spend an hour customizing my car in order to get the performance I need from it in order to win the race. So in that sense, like, I really like these arcade racers that you don't need to do that, but you can unlock, like... you know, increase acceleration pack, you know, and so you unlock it and it automatically tinkers, you know, with your car for you. And like you said, the track designs were really good. And it did have multiplayer, which I don't think it got a lot. It didn't get a lot of attention.
It did have multiplayer. I remember now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was actually okay. It was actually structured in a good way. I mean, there's definitely now if they were to release Asphalt 6 with that same multiplayer, it would look really outdated. You know, especially after the really good work that they did with the sort of the risk and reward system for multiplayer that they did for Modern Combat 2. Like, they're going to need to add a lot of rewards and ranks and stuff to Asphalt 6 multiplayer to really make that pop.
That's like the curse of all games released nowadays on the home consoles as well, really, isn't it? It's that sort of Modern Warfare curse, or Modern Combat for iPhone, is where if you don't give any supporting structure to your multiplayer, you're just not going to get a community, and you're not going to, you know, it's not going to feel good.
Yeah.
Because people are going to expect that sort of RPG thing now. And I mean, you know, it's a good thing. It's progress. That's what I mean. But yeah. Also, yeah, a slight annoyance. Also, it's completely random from Asphalt 5, because I always drive on the bumper, and Game Loft, all their driving games, they always consider the bumper view a camera. If I know it sounds a bit weird, but if you drive up to the side of a wall on Asphalt 5, and you can do this at home, it sort of boshes you to the left or whatever, but it feels like you're a square. I know that sounds a bit sort of strange, but it just feels like it doesn't feel right. Like, you're hitting the side, but it's knocking you away as if you were a lot wider than you actually are. So this is probably a 3D engine thing though. But yeah, Asphalt 5 and GTR Motor Racing Academy did this.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't know. I mean, after having played Need for Speed Hot Pursuit, which is also an arcade take on racing, it didn't really impress me terribly much. I mean, it was enjoyable in moments, not completely. I think Asphalt 6 has an opportunity to blow it out of the water. So
it keeps very interested about quite a lot every single entry, Asphalt. So
yeah, it has, hasn't it?
So it's a spring 2011, you say?
Yeah, late spring, probably like May, maybe slip into June.
What else is hiding inside this month?
What else? This is my favorite rumor in weeks. This one makes me laugh. A new independent studio by the name of Lagosoft is working on an Angry Birds clone called Angry Bunnies, just in time for Easter 2011. So basically what you're supposed to do is, rather than flinging birds, is you're supposed to like kick the rabbits into hopping. And how hard you kick them is how far they hop. And then you collect eggs on the other side of the screen.
Wow.
Well, I guess Rovio is saying the next one's going to be from the pig's point of view. So maybe it's just that's how it's going to be. It's going to be lots of angry
all sorts
animals.
Of farm animals. Yeah. So yeah, it's just like what did we say about this? It's just such a blatant copycat, right?
I don't know. The Angry Birds of a Z, I think, just pips it to the award of the most blatant copy. But I'd say this is a very close second.
Well, I think to me, that's like visually Angry Birds. Like, I can imagine an angry bird like pecking someone's eye out. Like, what is an angry bunny gonna do? Like, hump someone's like leg really angrily? Like, I don't get it.
Well, there was that film that was only slightly. Kind of
bright eyes.
No. There was a year ago. There was a zombie rabbit film.
Oh yeah, my god!
You're kidding me.
There was Wallace and Gromit, like, wasn't it?
What?
Wallace and Gromit had a bunny, which was
there was a proper cinema release. I think it was from Australia, and no one knew whether it was supposed to be. Oh, was it? That was sheep. That was zombie sheep, wasn't it? Sorry, it's different. But it was supposed to be quite a
still pertinent
kind of scary
conversation.
It was, you know, so I think anything can be made, but I mean the thing is, Angry Birds is not the name, is it? It's the quality of the gameplay. So yeah, good luck to them. All I can say.
They should have discussions with the developer that's doing Meat Warrior. Maybe they can share copycatting tips.
and the one that I had to cut out from the Finnish podcast.
So the last rumor is actually, I'm kind of sad about it. You may remember that back during the summer, we had written about a game called Weapons Free, which was essentially a new version of Eliminate that was coming out from NG Moco. And it looked really promising. It had really nice graphics, and the gameplay was set up in a sort of different way than Eliminate. So you had all these different sort of character classes that you could choose from, new weapons. It was more of a modern shooter too, instead of the futuristic setting that Eliminate took. It was promising. There were issues that needed, kinks that needed to be worked out before it launched, but it looked pretty good. Unfortunately, rumor has it that that's been canceled because NG Moco decided to use the work that they had done for that game as a basis for Star Wars Imperial Academy, which is currently undergoing a quote-unquote beta test in Canada.
Hmm. Oh, that's a shame. That was quite a good game. We played it for a week, didn't we?
Both you and John played it. I'm just having a look through the hands-on. Yeah.
I have also played Star Wars Imperial Academy, and it is a very different game. Yes.
Is it any good?
Yes. Mm. Oh, no. Oh, my God, no. I was actually really surprised. I think there was a little bit of excitement when it popped up, because it was like, oh wow, that looks really good in the screenshots, and it is kind of a good idea, but it's just really poorly done. It's buggy. for one, I was having a lot of audio problems.
Some of the graphics,
the graphics were like flickering and things like that. So hope, I mean, those are easily fixed things, but more problematic though is really the way that the game is set up. You know, in Eliminate, you had power-ups that just you would just run in and pick up. You know, you had a cloak one, you had a jetpack, all those sort of things. In Imperial Academy, you have to buy power-ups. So in the level are locked boxes, and then you run into one, and it says, "Purchase me for 2 credits."
Okay.
So oh dear.
Now the credits. You earn credits over a period of time.
But you can buy some to get them instantly.
And then you only earn experience, like Eliminate, you only earn experience when you have your elite, I think it's called the elite gauge, filled up. And I think that they're being very generous with the recharge rate right now because it is beta testing and they want people to be playing the game. So I didn't actually ever, I have yet to deplete my elite gauge. So that isn't so much of a problem. I just don't like the concept of having these boxes sitting in the environment that you basically had to play. Like, you're in the middle of a firefight. Like, you're in the middle of a battle. You don't have time to, like, stop and purchase something. And the other thing that really kind of annoys me is that there are a lot of interstitial ads. So between most of the screens, you have to view a full screen ad, which
for
I think is
for general stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, there was one. Yeah. Oh no. There was one that was for like L'Oreal makeup.
Oh no, that's terrible.
So I mean, it just feels very. It's a good idea, but it just feels very cobbled together, and it's very disappointing to me because I actually was expecting something much better.
That is odd.
That's disappointing.
Sounds like THQ presumably paid them to do it, or I'm not that Engine need the money at the moment, but
yeah, so I mean, I think it's
that kind of licensing is the best.
Well, I'm of the opinion that THQ has not done very well with the Star Wars license, and I know there are others that disagree. But you know, another I think this Imperial Academy first person shooter fits nicely alongside Star Wars Battle for Hoth, which was, you know, tower defense game that was a great idea. Great idea. It's a great concept, but it was so poorly done. You know, and I think that there's so much that can be done with the franchise. Some really, you know, creative things that I think people would buy. I mean, people are still buying this, you know, kind of these not so great games regardless. But, you know, I'm just really disappointed that it's not being treated with a little bit more quality.
Well, on that sad note, I think we'd better get out of the room of mine before the fumes engulf us and head straight to the fields of what we've been playing.
What we've been playing!
And this week, I'm not going to go first because it was claimed that I always go first. So, Tracy.
Well, let me grab my phone. Well, I've actually been playing a couple of games, the first of which I want to talk about two that are not out yet that are coming that really deserve mention, and I want to get it on everybody's radar. But first, I want to talk about Kingdom Conquest first, which is a new Sega game that came out earlier this week. It's a sort of like an MMO, but it's... there's a lot of single player to it. There's a lot of solo play, and it's a hardcore freemium, massively multiplayer game where you build a city and you send out creatures to basically conquer the surrounding lands. And then there are these massive towers that you can go into and fight enemies in real time. So it's this really interesting mix of sort of deliberate time-based strategy and real-time action. It's very unique. There's not really anything on the App Store that's like it, and I like it. It's very interesting. I'm still kind of getting a feel for how the game is balanced and sort of the way everything kind of works together, because there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of depth. But one of the things that really I think is causing me to take a liking to it is the fact that the in-app purchases are not constantly pushed on you. You know, you can, you know, it tells you, for example, you can build two buildings at a time, and that's it. And if you want to build more at any given time, you have to spend money. You have to buy these points. And those points don't have to be purchased only via cash. Like, you earn the points by doing other things. So, you know, if you don't feel like you have to spend money, which I appreciate, because, you know, we're talking about Star Wars Imperial Academy, and you're definitely in that game, you know, pushed, you know, it's basically like, look, if you want to unlock these power-ups, you're gonna have to spend money. So, I mean, I think the sort of light touch with the in-app purchases combined with the massive amount of depth that's there makes Kingdom Conquest a lot more attractive than the average freemium title.
I really like the fact that it's actually a game, you know. There is a game there, and yeah, that you, it's not like what's the other one that tries to do the same, Castlecraft, where it has that sort of like, it's got the sort of the same sort of atmosphere about it, and the fact that there's other people around you and that, like, they're competing kingdoms and you have to expand into other areas. But you don't get quite the same sort of, it's not that Farmville approach to how to do freemium, because Castlecraft was basically Farmville with a few other players, yeah, who could kill you, which wasn't fun. But this one's more of a sort of like, it's a much more slow burner, and there's lots more parts, mm-hmm, as you say, to it. It's very interesting. I'd recommend people check it out if you're into strategy.
Yeah.
Or action.
I think that's what's also really cool, is because you have these real time action sequences that are you can actually play in co-op.
With four players, yeah.
I mean, they've really put a lot of thought into it, and this is the sort of stuff, and I wrote about this back in September. This is the sort of stuff that I want to see from Sega. This is where their strength lies, and I think that, you know, look for the review. I'm going to do a review next week. And I think if you are looking for an in-depth sort of original experience, this would satisfy that craving. Two other games I want to mention that aren't out yet, that are both should be coming out next week. I know at least one will. The first is a puzzle game called Push Panic, which is from Appular. It's a tap puzzler where there are blocks coming down the screen, and the goal is to score as many points by tapping light-colored blocks before the blocks reach the top of the screen. And it's a really simple concept, but it's fun. It's really fun. I the first couple levels, I was like, oh, this is it. This is kind of, there's not much going on here. And it slowly adds power-ups, and it slowly adds different colored blocks. So you're dealing with more blocks, so it makes gaining points harder. It's just sort of a slow trickle of new elements being added, and it gets tough. It starts to get really challenging. It's colorful. It's fun. I like it. So, you know, look out for that. The other one is Sentinel 3, which is the tower defense game. That's a sequel. We did a review of Sentinel 2 last year, which I just loved. It was really well done. And the sequel has been submitted to Apple. It's probably going to come out next week. And I've played just a little bit, and it's really good. It's very well done. One of the things that I like about the developer Originate, which is a UK studio, actually, is that they really focus on trying to bring depth in this series. So there's a lot of, you know, you earn coins for purchasing units while you're in a level, but you also earn points for purchasing things outside of levels. So you can unlock new abilities and unlock special units. You can upgrade your units and do all those sorts of things. That gives it a bit of a strategic level outside of the individual levels. They've also added a ton. The campaign is much larger than the one that was featured in the previous game. So, and it has Game Center support along with OpenFaint to make sure, you know, that you can post your high scores on the leaderboard. So it's looking really good. And I would definitely keep an eye out for that if you are a Tower Defense fan.
Which I am.
Say it with conviction.
Thank you. John, I expect you're playing lots of very entertaining games this week.
I am. Lots and lots. I might even review some, amazingly. Although more keep coming out. So every time I think, oh, I'll go review that, another one comes out. So it's a real pain. So talking of Tower Defense, foolishly, for some reason, I downloaded Lord of the Rings Defense of Middle-earth, or whatever it's called.
I reviewed the Java version of that.
Yeah, I noticed you did. Yeah, it's really odd to glue a kind of like, oh, we're doing all freemium games now, and they've just got to release a very expensive license-based Tower Defense game, which is kind of, maybe you should expect from a license. It's kind of really odd. It's really, I don't know, I only played the first couple of levels, but it's really quite odd what they're doing there.
What sort of thing have they gone with for the iPhone one? Because the Java one was interesting because they basically just threw out quite a lot of the rules for Tower Defense and then run with it. They sort of used the license, and the license dictated what happened in the game, which is an interesting approach to take. It didn't quite work. It's too hard on the Java version. I was just being pummeled.
it doesn't seem to be quite hard. That's just an odd thing where you can put in. They have like set paths through the level, and you put in. They can put in obstacles to kind of like corral them or in the places you want to go.
Yeah, like wooden barriers and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And then you have your kind of your key Lord of the Ring type characters, who are obviously you only have one of them. You don't get like two Aragorn texts, or you don't get loads of Aragorns to put around. You just get one, and then you kind of level him up, and then you have all the kind of crummy little hobbits who are just useless you can buy as well. But it's just kind of. The other weird thing is because, like, obviously, in a lot of Tower Defense games, you set your towers up and then they move. They don't move, and they have a range. With these, they have a range around a set point, but they just move around. So sometimes they're in completely the wrong place, and a whole bunch of enemies just go piling through them because the actual characters wandered off somewhere. So it's
That is true. That happens.
So we'll see how I get on with that. And finally, I Bomber Defense has finally come out, so I can kind of play that, and that's kind of strange because I was playing that like about a month ago, I think, and it's finally come out with Chinlingo, so that's a kind of an interesting business kind of situation. And a few other things. There's one that's just come out today actually, which is really good. It's called what is it called? It's called They Need to Be Fed, which is this very kind of quirky indie game from a company called Yo-Yo Games, who kind of they're one of these kind of companies. They have a software package called Game Maker, which is for making very simple simple-ish 2D games. And they've had, I think, 100,000 games made with this package, and they're all available on their website as browser games. And now what they're doing is they're taking the best of them and converting them into iPhone games, and I mean Android as well, and other things in future. But this is kind of their first kind of big title, and it's really nice little kind of action kind of puzzler. It's a little kind of controlling little kind of aliens running around and you kind of doing weird things in gravity and stuff in a very kind of quirky style. So that's and of course Gun Brothers again, still going on with
you. Yeah, you're at level 12 now,
level
I think.
12 now. Maybe got to 13, I can't remember. I started playing the second planet. That was kind of it's good actually. Makes a bit more.
Is that the second planet or the one that's been added on the update? Because that was a relief.
A relief.
When they updated it and then it was a new planet, which I didn't have to go through the first one to get.
Exactly. But it's nice
to
alternate between them, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm up to a wave where basically if I get through it, but purely by luck, and then I'll die on the next wave. So then I have to go back and then I have to go through the shop. Which I don't like the fact it puts you through the shop automatically, and then I've got to go back to the actual wave again. That's where I'm at.
Oh, I see.
But your bro's helping me out. I like that. Keep playing, John.
Keep building up.
What I've been playing this week, Gun Bros as well for about 5 minutes, and also I've been playing Trade Nations, which is the new freemium title of the moment, except for the Kingdom Conquest, which is better. The Trade Nations is very much the Farmville-esque type of type of freemium title. The so I mean, like if you're expecting something of the same quality as King of Ghosts, no. But however, it isn't actually that bad. The it's an interesting sort of approach to the freemium ways of the genre, because it uses five resources as well as the gold. So these resources have to be then made into produce, which is then sold to get the gold, and then you use the gold as a resource, etc., etc. Also, it's trying to be a bit more sort of globally and economically aware. So your market where you sell the resources fluctuates depending on how other people buy and sell. Unfortunately, what's happened in the last 3 days is that the market has crashed. So wood has dropped by 30 gold, which is about a third of its value in 3 days. Stone has dropped by 40, which is about 50% of its value. Basically, because the game's structured like a freemium game, it's so that you only get wood and stone really early in the game, and you have to then work up. So you work up, you work up, you work up to get to that sort of the lumber, etc. Unfortunately, because everyone's got wood and stone, and because there's such a massive gap between levels, I mean, there is nothing to do, literally, on this game for a good 2 or 3 days. You won't have any new buildings, you won't have anything to aim for. So all these resources you gather up, wood and stone, you sell. So unfortunately, because of the structure of the game, it's collapsed the market. So now there's no point selling them. But there's no point, you know, keeping them, because there's nothing to build. So it's kind of a game which really needs a lot more buildings. It needs a lot more direction. There's none of this. Godfinger was great for this, in the fact that it gave you stuff to do at all, every single level. Like, even when you were level 23, there was objectives for you to go aim for. There was stuff to go for. On this game, there's nothing. Like, after the tutorial, it will then say, occasionally, it will say something like, upgrade your keep. And it's like, okay, but that will take me literally 2 days to do. Okay, yeah, no, do it. Okay, so I did it. What next? No, you do. There's nothing there. You have to wait for 2 levels. How do I go up 2 levels? Well, you've got to sell, you know, you've got to sell stuff from your bakery. But that's like 20 XP per good, and it's like 2,000 XP for the next level. Yeah, and you've got 2 levels to go up. So, you know, get baking. there's no buildings.
Oh, jeez.
They've left themselves with, like, it's a good idea. I mean, it's a great idea, in fact. I mean, I'm a massive fan of German economic strategy games where you have lots of resources and, like, you know, basically what I'm trying to say here is I'm a bit of a nerd. Of nerds. That's what I'm saying.
That's okay. We knew that. We knew that well.
But it doesn't quite get the balance right. And I think for freemium games, especially ones which are in the Farmville mold, they need to get you in. They need to make sure you feel like you're getting somewhere, progressing. Then they need to keep moving that progress slightly further away until the point where you think to yourself, oh, I really want to go up the level, but it's going to take so long, I'm going to buy something. That's their idea. That's the whole idea behind freemium games. This game doesn't do that. It goes like, here's lots of stuff. And then the next stuff is like four days away. Don't worry about it. That's no incentive to me as a consumer. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's a good idea. It's nicely presented, but it needs more stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's my... this is why I don't go last, John.
Because it just stops.
Yeah, it just stops. And that's my game. We have questions.
Oh, great.
Let me just also I need to apologize for the for presuming. Let me just, yeah, this is my preparation here. I've got to apologize to you, Kevin, for suggesting that you were asking because you preferred the video podcasts. Sorry about that. Anyway, Splat asks, is Will starting some sort of AA group?
What?
Okay, we've got a question here from Ollie Wally. Do you think the 3DS is a threat to the iOS device? This is quite a commonly asked question. I mean, like, to be fair, I can see why. 3DS is a... It's the next big portable device out. It's the next generation, as it were. It's the It's the next generation on Nintendo handheld, which is obviously going to be important to the portable gaming sphere. Because, I mean, Nintendo basically created it. But is it going to be a threat to the iOS devices? Do you think it is, anyone?
Sure. Yeah, sure it is. I mean, you have to think about it less. It's not like somebody says, I don't, there probably are a few people that would think this way, but I don't think the majority of people who are engaging in portable games are saying, do I want an iPhone or am I going to buy a 3DS? I don't think the decision is like that. I think where a lot of the competitiveness between handheld and sort of iPhone and Android is more in the development scene. So you have these developers that say, okay, we want to make a portable game. And right now, everybody wants to make portable games for iPhone because that's where all of the movement is. That's where all the action is. If you have a 3DS that starts to really sell and it becomes really popular, and developers start saying, hey, maybe we should start making our games first and foremost for 3DS rather than starting our development on iPhone, that becomes a problem. This is one of the reasons why iPhone has become so successful in the last year, is because the sheer number of devices that are out there combined with ease of development and a thirst for games has led developers to say, hey, we're going to make games for this device. So you have more high profile games that are coming out on iPhone now than PSP or DS. 3DS is a threat in the sense that it could influence that balance. So, you know, 3DS is going to have, you know, some of the biggest franchises in gaming, right? It's going to have Metal Gear. You know, it's going to have a Resident Evil. It's going to have, of course, Nintendo games like Legend of Zelda. So those are always going to attract people. But if they start to get a critical mass where a lot of these sort of independent developers decide that they want to make, you know, downloadable games on DS, 3DS first, rather than making downloadable games first for iPhone, that's where the threat comes in. As for the next year, probably not that much of a concern. Things probably won't change very much. I would start looking for an indication of, you know, a shift in sort of power, for lack of a better word, you know, 16, 18 months from now. Because that's, by that time, 3DS will have been out for a while. Developers will be, you know, kind of have start to get a handle on how the system works, what sort of games work well on the platform and which ones don't. And that's when developers are going to start making decisions as to what platform they'd like to lead with.
I guess the kind of interesting thing would be, I mean, obviously, the reason you just kind of say no is Nintendo are horrible at doing digital downloads. I mean, I kind of had, had this discussion the other day because I wrote a rather flippant piece about I didn't really care about PSP 2 if it sticks or not, because it wasn't, the hardware's not the problem. It's whether this anyone's actually going to make PSP mini games anymore after Sony pulls it up so much. And it's exactly the same with, you know, with the 3DS, in a sense of where the kind of people we're talking to, so people who, you know, who might come up with an Angry Birds or something like that, who are not going to be releasing kind of cartridges, you know, who are not going to be spending months and months and months, but might spend 3 months on a game. I mean, the interesting thing will be is if 3DS does somehow get digital stuff right and it allows you to sell games and make money if you're selling games for like $2 or something. They can't really, those games could not be easily ported to other platforms. So it would kind of make sense for Nintendo to spend a bit of time and money trying to encourage people to make cool indie, you know, Angry Birds in 3D, because that locks them in to a Nintendo kind of world.
If they can get it to take off.
Yeah, but I'm just having used, you know, the PSP, I think Sony's net way of downloading stuff is not terrible, it's just the pricing's awful. And with Nintendo, it's, I mean, again, the DSiWare kind of channel is a bit clunky, but the DSi is a bit clunky. But, you know, so again, it's not terrible, but it's just commercially, no one's downloading them, so no one's doing any interesting games.
if you're a consumer and you're thinking, do I want a games console? You would go, well, yeah, I do want a games console. And then it's not really much of a decision. But if you're a consumer and you're thinking, do I want a new phone and I like games, I'm going to go for the iPhone, you know, kind of thing. And then you're going to be playing on the iPhone. And then once you've got the iPhone, you're going to think to yourself, do I really need a games console? I don't know. Maybe a few people would say yes, but most people would probably say no.
No, I mean, I think over the next couple of years, I find it hard to see how either Sony or Nintendo are going to have the next generation of devices are going to sell as much as they have before. Because iPod Touch has replaced those devices even for quite young kids, and everyone's getting phones. So I'm sure they will still sell tens of millions, but I think that kind of the portable gaming scene has shifted massively.
That's the end of this week's podcast. We've had a jolly good time.
We have.
And I'm sure you would agree. So we've covered Rage. We've covered a lot of things. We've covered Rumours, Backbreaker 2, and there was also a lot of jolly conversation there. So if you were excited and pleased with what happened today, then maybe you should join us next week for another fantastic podcast, where hopefully I won't be hosting, therefore I won't ramble at the end of the podcast. Anyway, thank you very much for joining us this week. I've been Will Wilson.
I've been Tracy Erickson.
And I've been John Jordan.
And we bid you good night, or good day, or good afternoon, or good morning. Good morning, good night. Good afternoon, good evening. I'll probably cut out the ramble. I think the second beer.